You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
Movie BS with Aaron Snyder.
Jeff and Eric were walking through the woods one night. That's right. When they saw something giving off an eerie light. So bright. Turned out it was an alien meteorite. That's right. And its radiation gave them superhuman insight. So bright.
And on that day, they vowed to use their powers for good instead of evil, swearing to protect mankind from the vile clutches of their evil arch-nemesis, Bad Cinema. And if you find yourself in a bind at the multiplex, not sure what to watch, you too can call on
Movie BS with Aaron Snyder.
Hello and welcome to Movie BS with Aaron Snyder. We are the only movie podcast on the internet. I am your host, Jeff Baer. This is my co-host, Eric D. Snyder.
Hello, how are you? Welcome to the show, you listeners. I'm a host, Eric D. Snyder. That's another host, Jeff Baer. And here's the show.
You're an A host, all right.
Mm-hmm. What are you drinking there? Looks like ice water.
No, it's the drink of the summer. It's sparkling water. Mm-hmm. A little lime mint, and then ice cubes. There we go. It's very refreshing.
So it's lime mint water.
It's lime mint sparkling water. Mm-hmm. It used to be lime mint separate. Like you could drink a whole glass of this limeade with mint thing. Right. It's like one of the fancy Whole Foods things. I don't know.
Sure.
It's very tasty.
Right.
And a little bubbly, because I then, did the whole soda stream thing.
Yeah, I know you're a fan of that.
Hey, are you drinking anything?
I got some water, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Same as you, basically.
Ice cubes? It's cold?
It is cold. It's from the refrigerator.
When you come over, you don't normally go for the cold water.
It's cold enough coming out of the tap, generally.
That seems sad.
I'm perfectly content with it. And I know that you often offer me sparkling water.
I do.
And I believe I have taken you up on your offer zero times.
Oh, I would say once, maybe twice.
Like a soda is fine, but sparkling water I have no interest in. It's just water only with bubbles. And that's not an enticement to me. And you always think that I'm like living like a monk or something. Like that I'm choosing not to enjoy myself.
Not to the fullest, I guess. Yeah.
We have different definitions occasion? Of enjoying yourself, I guess.
I guess it
makes no difference to me whether there's bubbles in the water. If I ever did say yes, I guarantee it was to make you feel good. Like, well, he keeps offering. Sure, Jeff, give me some sparkling water this time.
Wow, he's in for the night of his life, some sparkling water. Now Eric's really living it up.
Mm-hmm. Burping and everything. Hey, we start every show with an iTunes review. Shut up. Yes, we do.
Everyone.
Every single show. And we read it in old-timey radio voice. This is a short review by Tony Calatan. And here's what he says. Relaxed and amusing, these critics are a breeze to listen to, and I agree with their thoughtful assessments. It's so short, he didn't even put a period at the end of it.
Nice. Like
he was very short on time.
But he wanted to do it.
Yeah. Thank you, Tony.
It was so important to him. He had the tiniest of windows, but he had it on his calendar to do this today, and he did it.
We appreciate that.
Yep.
And, yeah, anyone, write us a review on iTunes. We'll read it on the show. We don't care.
You do. You want it to be nice, if you can be nice. Or funny.
Nice or funny, yes.
Nice or funny.
It can be mean if it's funny. So let's get to the movies, shall we?
Oh, yes, we shall.
We have a few. I don't want to spoil anything, but I think we have a couple of good'uns.
I think so, too.
Yeah, I mean, we'll find out. We haven't really talked about it, because we never do. People, I don't think, realize that you and I only speak to each other 1 hour a week over Skype to record this show.
That's what it says in the contract.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was why I signed up. Mm-hmm. I was like, I can limit it to an hour?
Yeah.
Give me the paper. I'll sign.
First up, The Nice Guys. Speaking of us,
I think it's – oh, yeah, it is. I was just going to correct you and say I think it's just Nice Guys.
It's the Nice Guys and not because, Mr. Nice Guys.
Not Mr. Nice Guys, which I wrote for some reason in my notebook before the movie started. Mr. Nice Guys.
Mr. Nice Guys. Also a good title.
Because
why is it plural? Right away you're intrigued. Mm-hmm. Mr. Nice Guys.
Nice Guys. Three names really need to be known here. Shane Black, the writer and director. And then the stars, Russell Crowe and Ryan Gosling. That's who you have in this film set in the late 70s. I want to say like 77, I think.
77 it was, yeah. Shane Black is the guy. Well, he wrote Lethal Weapon. That's how he started. Wrote Lethal Weapon, mm-hmm. wrote some other of those kinds of movies, and then wrote and directed Kiss Kiss Bang Bang and then Iron Man 3.
Right.
And if you haven't seen Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, stop what you're doing immediately and go watch it. Immediately.
I am such a big fan of that movie. And it's been, I don't think it's been too long, but it's been just long enough to where I'll have forgotten some of the jokes. Yeah.
No, it's a terrific movie. And it's a good an appetizer for The Nice Guys, which is sort of a kind of a spiritual sequel or prequel, I guess. It's got a similar tone and snappy dialogue and twisty plot and all that.
Right. And you can tell the same guy's hands are all over it. Mm-hmm. That's a really good thing here. Starts as it would a porn star dies.
Right. And angel gets its wings.
That's exactly how it works. And then it's like
two not quite private investigators. Well, one is Ryan Gosling plays Holland March, and he is an actual licensed PI. And he's got a 13-year-old daughter named Holly, who often is his chauffeur because he drinks a lot, which I find endlessly amusing. Not that he drinks, although that's funny, but the fact that she chauffeurs him around and that nobody really seems to question it. Like, it's just sort of, that's what they do.
That's what you did in the 70s. Come on.
And then there's also Russell Crowe plays Jackson Healy, who is not actually a licensed PI, but does he give a job title for himself?
I don't think he has a technical job title. It's like he's muscle.
Yeah, if a guy is giving undue attention to a woman or girl, then you hire Jackson Healy to go and give him a message with some brass knuckles.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a good guy. He only, you know, seems to fight on the side of right.
Right.
And he's bloated and divorced. And I realize this later. He looks like he drinks a lot, but doesn't.
Well,
like he looks like a character who would be a drunk, but isn't.
Well, I think he was.
Yeah, probably.
I think it's that thing of like, yeah, this is the guy who's like not necessarily getting his life in gear, but maybe he's trying a little bit more than he used to.
Sort of barely like, keeping it together.
Like maybe he's done being an idiot.
And
like he's tired of that, and it wears so well on Russell Crowe here.
It's
first
so great
of all
that he's letting it all hang out. Good. For
he
him.
Actually, it did make me think maybe it's better for him to be a little bit bigger size because he will dive into characters a little bit more and care a little bit more about the role that he chooses instead of what he had been doing as a leading man lately.
He did, and he did the action hero thing for a while back in the 2000s, and it was fine, but it kind of ran its course. And so yeah, now he's got that 52 years old, got that paunch, letting it hang out there, and totally without vanity, just being a disheveled wreck. And it's good for the character. It's good for the movie. Good
you
for
know,
him. He wears
it was actually making me think about it. Like, what leading man that still has his looks, like, actually has gone the way of, you know what, I'm better on the side. I'm more useful. I enjoy it more. Like, whatever the case may be, but they head down that path. And it's like Colin Farrell and Jude Law, maybe, and then it was like yeah. I'm just like I don't like nobody
well,
like
whoever. I think when that happens, I doubt it's the actor's choice. I think it sort of comes to a point where you're not getting the lead roles anymore, and so you take what you can get.
You're not getting them typically because like something's changed about you. But what I'm saying
well,
is,
no, just
like,
you get older.
Colin Farrell and Jude Law have actually like it feels like they're choosing.
Like, yeah, and I'm saying, I mean, maybe they are, but I would suspect that generally.
I'm saying Miami Vice isn't necessarily going to be something that they're going to grab for next time, or like Sky Captain and then whatever. I'm saying
they won't be able to because the parts will be offered to them.
All right.
But yes, it's nice to see when the actors transition to character actors and do fun stuff. Mm-hmm. So anyway, what happens here, these two, they wind up having a common interest in a – it has to do with a missing – well, that poor, the porn star's aunt thinks she's still alive. So she hired the Gosling character to look for her. In the process, find someone who knew her, this mysterious girl named Amelia. And so they're both looking for Amelia, and it involves, well, porn, of course. Big party at a porn producer's house.
Right, some politicking. Yeah, there's some politicking.
Yeah, Kim Basinger is a Justice Department official.
That's right. And you have plenty of shady characters in and around there.
And thugs.
Yeah, and one, Keith David does a lovely job, especially when he's confronting Russell Crowe the few times that he gets to in the film. But the nice thing here is, the more I think about it, Russell Crowe is he's the nicer guy of the two. Like, yeah. He's better, and he knows he's better.
He's a better person.
But at the same point, he understands that Ryan Gosling actually, his character does have a way of figuring these things out. Sometimes bumbling, sometimes fairly accurate. Like, he's sometimes pretty smart.
But he's fairly good at being a PI. Fairly
yes.
Good. Yeah.
And it's a really interesting thing to, like, have him recognize that and enjoy the journey that way.
The plot unfolds kind of in the way of the old, you know, detective noir movies. Only funny and, you know, with a lot more profanity and gunshots and boobs and stuff than in, say, you know, The Maltese Falcon. But it's that kind of story. And the two of these two, Crowe and Gosling.
When they can just be alone and, like, having some filler dialogue. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
Not only did we not know that we needed the comedy team of Crowe and Gosling, but if you had suggested it to us, we'd have said, nah, that wouldn't work.
Right.
That doesn't sound like a good idea. Because Crowe, I looked this up. He's been in about 40 movies. I think we can say maybe four now have been comedies. Ugh. Like, he does not – and that's stretching a couple of them.
Yeah.
So earlier on, before he was big, he did a couple of more comedy-like things. But he's not done a lot. And he's not a funny guy, generally.
No.
He was not going on Saturday Night Live.
That's right.
He's also not a live performer, I guess. And Gosling, too, hardly done any comedy in movies. He had some practice, I think, on Canadian TV. But
we'll
still,
never know.
These are not,
there's no way to know.
No,
but no, it's not. You don't immediately think
comedy team,
right? Dynamic duo. You don't think that.
Crowe is mostly playing straight man a lot, which is good at. But then also he kills it when he's got the punchlines. Mm-hmm. And Gosling is like this tornado of silliness. He's got a high pitched scream. He does a Lou Costello impersonation where you see the dead body and you're like.
That's right. That's right.
He's got, and of course, the character being drunk a lot. He's got that sense of logic. Just a great bumbling, funny character.
Lovely drunk here. Like when he does get drunk, it is played for laughs. Even though you realize, what is this guy doing? He's got a daughter that shouldn't be here, and so on and so forth.
There's an underlying there, and there has been in all of Shane Black's movies this kind of darkness to the humor. You have to. Have to accept some jokes about sort of dark things.
So what's interesting for me is as we went along with this movie, I just kept enjoying myself and finding the moments when it is just the two of them bantering the best. Mm-hmm. And then the third act takes it up a notch for me when, again, Gosling's character kind of gets a new idea into his head.
Right.
And it is so much fun. I really loved the action ending here.
I really like the relationship with what's his name? Hatch Hunt. March. Gosling's character. And the daughter. I think that's a nice wrinkle to have the 13-year-old girl. And, you know, she's as much – she takes care of him as much as he takes care of her. And I really like their dynamic. The backstory on mom's absence kind of didn't amount to anything. Like, I kind of thought that was going to pay off in somehow, and it kind of didn't.
There was that, and I guess for me, while Amelia is central to the story, the character, every time I found her talking, I became disinterested a little bit in the film.
Yeah.
It was just the performance to me was just not something I would enjoy.
Well, she's and her character is kind of just a MacGuffin, and MacGuffins shouldn't talk.
Right.
But she's the plot device, and yeah, not much to her. I agree.
Right.
But small complaints overall. Laughed a lot. It's very funny. Well shot. Smart. Mm-hmm. Handsomely put together.
I think even though it is close to 2 hours, I think it'll be a fun time to watch again.
It did. I will be honest. It did also feel a little long to me.
Yes.
I liked it a lot, but I...
That's why I was really happy that the third act picked it up for me again.
Yeah.
Because it did have that moment of like, oh, it ran out of momentum, but it didn't. I thought it grabbed it back. It just could have used a little bit of a trimming.
I give it a B+.
I'm an 8 out of 10. Identical.
BS approved.
BS approved.
Now, The Nice Guys is a very, very R-rated comedy. But also, if you want to bring the family to something, here's Neighbors 2, Sorority Rising.
I don't think – well, I mean, they're college kids.
Oh, there's a little girl, too. Remember the little girl, the little daughter?
I do remember the little daughter. You know, the daughter eventually became too much of a prop for me.
It tends to happen with children.
But there was some very good moments involving her.
Of course, a sequel.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, let's do that.
Sequel to Neighbors from a couple years ago, which was a very funny movie.
Mm-hmm. I was
delightfully surprised by it. And now this sequel, I think, is also really funny. And the scenario this time, our couple, Mac and Kelly, Seth Rogen, Rose Byrne.
Oh, Rose Byrne.
Lover. They are selling their house, the house next to what used to be the frat house, and then they're in escrow, and then wouldn't you know it, a sorority moves in, which is such a lame premise, but they make it work in the movie. They justify it, I think.
They justify it a little bit. There's one particular scene where Zac Efron is actually in his former house.
Right.
That kind of seals the deal for me. To go along in the ride and kind of forget how silly it is that history is repeating itself like this.
Well, yeah, these college freshmen girls, Chloe Grace Moretz and Kiersey Clemons, and what's the third one? Where'd she go? Nora. Beanie Feldstein. Oh, my gosh. Beanie Feldstein.
Winner.
It's a great name, Beanie Feldstein. Three college girls, freshman girls.
They want to start a sorority, but...
well, why do they want to start a sorority?
So they can have their own parties that are enjoyable. And the movie does an amazing job of justifying that this is ridiculous.
It's a real thing, that sororities in the United States, part of the Greek system, cannot host parties.
Right.
Only the
And so then you get a lot of hoe-related functions.
Right, a lot of hosting parties when the frats are in charge. I like how what's her name, Selena Gomez, as the sorority president, who says, this is an actual thing, and it's almost like she's talking to the audience, like saying, this is a real thing, you guys. Sororities can't host parties.
Because, so that is most
the,
people
that's
would
the
think,
basis of the premise here, and it's true. So, yes, they want to start a unsanctioned sorority. They can do whatever it wants, and they need a house to do it in.
And so there you go, and guess who can help the guy who hasn't really grown up yet? Teddy's available for the job.
And Teddy, the Zac Efron guy, I liked him in the first movie, and I like what they did with the character. It was all really good. I'm delighted by what they did here, where he's like this sort of lost, wandering soul. His frat friends have gotten jobs and careers and love lives and stuff, and he's still working at Abercrombie & Fitch, I guess, is what he says.
Yeah, I think that's the –
And he doesn't feel
definitely
valued.
Retail.
He doesn't feel valued anywhere. And then he maybe finds his calling and helps sorority girls plan parties. And I just like that they've made him like this sensitive person.
He's made right because of his situation. He really seems to be open minded in the sense of like maybe he was kind of a frat boy that should have been better to women, because this is hands down the most progressive comedy I've seen. I think
certainly like, the I'm most just... frat related, college related comedy for sure.
I mean, it's, my goodness,
it's amazing that you can. And the progressive side of it is nice, and it's quite impressive that you can make a comedy about frats and sororities. That's not awful to women, and that's not all hoes and stuff, and that's actually about the women wanting to be more than that. Without being preaching, it's not like doesn't feel like a message movie at all. It's just
there's still plenty of jokes, but it's like it it's good to everybody. Like it's got like, you know what I mean? It's yeah. really nice. Just
yeah,
like
and they the way they reform the frat guy Teddy, where he's because mm-hmm. it would totally be acceptable to make this about let's not make girls hoes, but still really lay into the frat boys for being idiots. And it right. doesn't even do that either.
No, it doesn't.
It gives it enough, you know, sort of establish the frattiness of frats, but it doesn't make Teddy and his other frat boys objects of derision. Like you said, it's nice to everybody.
And I got to say, with Mac and Kelly, like all the little conversations that they have about their life.
They're
just,
a great married couple.
I adore it. I love them like nodding to escrow in the beginning.
Pretending to understand what that
right.
means. I like, and this carries over from the first film, I like that they're equal partners. It's
100%,
not the husband
yes.
with the harebrained schemed and the wife rolling her eyes. They're mm-hmm. both equal, which means they're both equally idiotic. They both, you know, equally screw up.
Yeah.
And they're such a great team. I really like that.
I would say for me, the back and forth of the frats against Mac and Kelly the first time around felt there was more comedy in that for
yeah.
me this time than but at the same point, it didn't feel necessarily disappointing. The only time that I felt disappointed in this movie is when potentially a sorority prank goes too far with Mac and Kelly, and they end up in a like weird miscommunication with their phones.
That didn't quite work. Yeah,
not it just like on any level visually, no. it even looked bad
looked
because
terrible.
There was some
yes.
green screen that was used. That
yeah.
was just like, what are you doing here?
That person was nowhere near that place.
Yeah, and so that was really unfortunate that it.
Yeah, they needed.
It suddenly
something
felt
in there.
Like it went dumb. Like, yeah. it's just like, this is dumb.
The story needed something there to show
mm-hmm.
the sorority
right.
trying to tear them apart, trying to divide them. But, yeah, the what they came up with didn't quite work. What else do I love?
Oh, man. When they were at the tailgating was a lot of fun.
Very funny. The whole thing is the Mac and Kelly want the sorority girls just to not have parties while they're in escrow. Just wait 30 days
yeah.
and then do what you want. And it becomes this war between them. And yet the girls aren't the villains. Like they're not, we
right.
understand where they're coming from.
right.
And, you know, of course they want to throw parties and, but they're not, it's not just an us against them. It's yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody kind of, you kind of understand everybody.
Yeah.
Dave Franco's back again as Teddy's friend. He's there and,
right, and then Ike Barinholtz.
Yeah,
he's back again. Gerard Carmichael, like such a small
Jared.
Role. Oh yeah, that's right. It's Jared. I always say Gerard. Like he cracks me up. So it was just fun to see him
yeah.
in the movie again.
Oh, it might be Gerard. It's just not Gerard.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Yeah. Anyway, I've never heard him say his name. Might be Gerard. Funny stuff. All the way through, I have no major complaints about it. And it's got five writers. It's the two from the first movie, Andrew
mm-hmm.
Jayako and Brendan O'Brien, and then also the director, Nicholas Stoller, and Seth Rogen, and his writing partner, Evan Goldberg. But it doesn't feel like a movie that was written by committee. Like it feels to me pretty cohesive and
agreed.
No extraneous scenes. So
And it zips. It's 92 minutes.
92 minutes, yeah. Zips right by.
Zips by. Mm-hmm. Again, it's the, like, there's only, like, to me, one kind of screeching halt scene that took the wind out of the sails for me. But otherwise, it's a really good time.
Yeah, that's another B+ for me.
It's an 8 for me.
There we go. And then there's another movie that you did not see.
Yeah, it's for the birds.
Mm-hmm. It is for the birds.
I'm angry I missed it.
Don't be. The Angry Birds movie. Just imagine what a terrible job it would be to have to write a movie based on a video game. Just imagine that for a few minutes. I'll give you a few minutes to think about it.
All right. Just everybody? Like,
yeah.
We're just going to be quiet for a while?
Yeah.
Okay.
There you go. And, like, not even one of, like, the really elaborate games that have characters, but just one of the games where you're just, like, throwing things at other things. Like, there's no story there. What are you going to... Like, and you figure the whatever the game is about, that's going to have to be the movie's climax. And you, the writer, just have to come up with a plot that gets you to that. So how do I get these birds to be slingshotting each other at some pigs' houses? How do I get to that point? And I just feel bad for the guy. John Biddy He's from The Simpsons. He wrote The Simpsons movie. He's been around, written for lots of respectable things. And the Chipmunks movies, but whatever. Anyway.
Wow, he's just forgiven for Chipmunk movies. Interesting.
Well, but he's also done good things, is what I'm saying.
Okay. All right.
And, you know, a job's a job. You got to pay the bills.
Oh, yes.
I don't blame him, is what I'm saying.
No, of course not.
This is a doomed, creatively bankrupt project to begin with. Because the...
So they figure out a way to get the birds to hit pig houses.
Yeah, I guess. The Finnish game developers who made the game also produced the movie. So I picture poor John Vitti sitting there in a conference room with these Finnish people, listening to their idiotic notes about like what has to happen. Just a nightmare. And it's total garbage, complete failure of a movie. It's on Bird Island. You got a couple of – you got all these birds. They're flightless. All birds are flightless. They have a legend about a mighty eagle who can fly. But some people think he's mythical. And we got one bird named Red, and it's Jason Sudeikis. And he's this irresponsible snark machine, acts like a child, and he gets sentenced to anger management because he's angry. And there he meets the yellow one, voice of Josh Gad, and then Bomb, who's Danny McBride.
Okay.
And the yellow one, Chuck, he's actually not angry. I don't know what he's doing there. But then Bomb, when he gets angry, he explodes.
What? And,
yeah, he explodes when he gets angry. And then
does he reappear?
He doesn't even disappear. He just sort of – they never actually show – I don't think they ever actually show directly the moment of explosion. Like they'll cut to outside of the house or whatever.
And the house like shakes because
yeah,
he explodes just
explodes. Yeah. More like when Daffy Duck gets shot in the head.
Right.
His beak will spin around, but he's okay. Then the Bird Island is visited by pigs, ship full of pigs. And they've come from Pig Island. Birds didn't know pigs existed. They thought they were alone in the world.
Got it.
So now these pigs, and they're excited to meet the visitors, except for Red. He's suspicious of the foreigners. The angry Red guy is suspicious of the foreigners. And rightly, because it turns out their plan is to steal the birds' eggs and eat them.
What?
Yeah, that's their plan.
And, like, all eggs are babies in this world? Or is, like, some... Yeah. You can't fry them up?
They get into it. Like, at one point... The thing that gets Red sent to anger management in the first place is he's performing at a children's birthday, hatch day party, and he accidentally cracks open an egg. And so the baby bird is fine, but now the baby bird thinks that he's his father because it's the first face he saw.
Wow.
So, yeah, all eggs are people. There's no
– Got it.
Or birds, I mean, not people.
Unfertilized.
Right.
Yeah.
But they are fertilized is what I'm saying.
There are no unfertilized
ones.
But
so
the pigs want to eat baby birds.
You know, I think the pigs think, and I think the movie thinks that the pigs are getting like yolks and egg whites in there. They want to eat eggs. They're talking about omelets and stuff.
Oh.
But then also, I don't think the movie knows a lot about birds because there's Mighty Eagle, who turns out not to be mythical, and it's the voice of Peter Dinklage.
Oh.
And our three heroes climb up a mountain to find him to get his help to retrieve the eggs. And he emerges from a cave and takes a whiz into the lake that they've been swimming in. Like, it comes out, like, stretching, like, first thing in the morning and goes to take a leak. And he stands there, and the way the film shows it in astonishing detail. There's a shot from behind the eagle, from between his legs, and we see this big, thick stream of urine. He's peeing out of... I think the movie thinks he has a penis. I think he's standing there with his junk out and he's peeing. And, you know, for years, children's cartoons have refused to show urination in such vivid detail. But the heroes of the Angry Birds movie are not afraid. There's also Red, when he gets mad, at one time he says, "Pluck my life." And he refers to his crotch area as his giblets.
Mm.
So, again, I don't think they know anything about birds. And second, parents, enjoy your kids saying that. Enjoy hearing that repeated. It's a really pointless movie is the thing. Like, the story has no message or theme or lesson or moral. The main character learns nothing, changes nothing. He's at the end of the movie, he is better liked than he used to be, but only because he did something useful. So it's the Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer thing. But he hasn't learned or anything. He just happened to be right when he was suspicious of the immigrants. You'd expect a movie like this to have, like, the celebrity and brand names, like the stores would have, like, bird kind of names.
Right.
And that stuff is there, but none of it's very funny. Just very uninspired. Very little world building in general.
You know what's like, crazy? 13 well-known names in this cast.
Oh, yeah. A lot of well-known names.
Yeah. Nuts. None funnier to see on the list than Sean Penn.
I believe he's the voice of an angry bird in the anger management class who really only grunts.
Oh.
I think that's who that is. I could not pick out Kate McKinnon. I recognize Michael Key. Tony Hale, I don't remember who he was. I mean, I see the descriptions now. I remember
those
characters, but yeah. No, it's just garbage. It's just, and you can tell that it was, well, we got to set up a situation where birds are slingshotting themselves at pigs and didn't go much further than that.
Sorry for you.
Yeah. I really did not like it. I gave it a D-. Here's the one thing I laughed at. When a mother bird is sending her kids off to school and to pack their lunches, she chews up a bunch of food and then barfs into some brown paper bags.
That's not bad.
That's funny.
Yeah.
So that's what saved it from an F. The mama bird barfing into brown paper bags. There's your D- right there.
I'm easy. Four more like that, yeah. You would have had a C.
Seriously, yeah. It is. It's really not that hard. I really don't think it's that hard to make me laugh. I think I laugh a fair amount at things that are funny.
Like, yeah.
You just have to be funny is all.
Right.
I do have that standard. And then here's another movie that you also didn't see. I'm only going to talk about this one for a minute.
Why?
Just because you didn't see it, and it's always boring when it's just me. And it's a good movie, but not worth talking a lot about.
Okay.
It's called a Bigger Splash, and no.
Yes,
not a sequel to Splash. No. Not a sequel to Splash. Nothing to do with Splash. No mermaids in it. It's actually a remake of a 1969 French film. And you got Tilda Swinton as a rock star in Italy with her boyfriend, who's a little bit younger than her. They're spending a couple weeks relaxing. She's recovering from a vocal surgery, so she's not talking, or she's not supposed to talk. And they're joined by her ex-boyfriend, played by Ralph Fiennes, who's this music producer and very, gregarious, glad-handing, friendly, party kind of guy, shows up with his teenage daughter, who he didn't know existed until recently.
Oh.
The film does a really good job of setting up the relationships between the three adults.
Your minute's up.
Oh, crap. We get a sense of how they interact with each other, and it establishes that well. And then the whole thing is about this time they spend together at this resort on this island, bringing up old jealousies and reminiscences and whatnot. And it's a good sophisticated adult drama that is very talky, and that's fine. Just when it starts to feel like I wish something else would happen, something does happen, and there's a little bit more sort of conventional action to it. Some intrigue, a bit of intrigue emerges.
How are the other two, Dakota Johnson and Matthias? How do you say his last name?
Matthias Schoenaerts, I guess. The Belgian guy.
Yeah.
Dakota Johnson is really good. She's the daughter. She continues to prove that she's better than the movie that made her famous. Which she is. And there's Matthias Schoenaerts I really like. I think he's really solid. He's there with Tilda Swinton, who's this mystical creature, and he acts very well alongside her. They have a really good relationship that feels authentic and lived in.
Nice.
Ralph Fiennes is good. Ralph Fiennes is naked quite a bit. Just full-on Ralph Fiennes and all over the place. Because his character is very casual. I think Tilda Swinton says about him that he doesn't believe in limits. Anyway, it's good. It's a solid B, a Bigger Splash.
Cool.
Good grown-up drama for you. Hey, Jeff, what's it time for now?
Well, I'm glad you asked, Eric. It's the question of the week.
Has it been a week already?
It's been one.
There you go. The time flies.
In honor of Angry Birds, make up a good idea for a movie based on an app.
Make up a good idea.
So we don't have any answers now. We have great answers, and we have picked the best five. Mm-hmm. As we do every week, we pick the best blank, and then we do that.
Every week we choose the best certain number of them.
There you go.
Yep.
And you can always find the rest of the answers on our Facebook page, facebook.com/moviebspdx.
That's where we are.
That's where we are.
Should I go first?
You should go first.
All right. Paul has one right off the top. Time Hop. He says it's a time travel thriller in which the protagonist must hop through his or her own memories on the same day each year in the past to solve a huge conspiracy. So how does this work? So it's today. It's May 20th. So I'm looking at May 20th from last year.
Yes.
And then from the year before that, May 20th.
And it's kind of like the fix-it situation, right? You find yourself in it until you solve that problem, maybe?
Oh, maybe. Maybe, yeah. All right.
Maybe we do it that way. Somebody says, like, you know what? August 21st. It's amazing what's happened to me on August 21st. And then he has to, like, do those moments over again.
Well, because, was that movie called One Day that took place on the same day every year.
Yes.
But this one we're going back in time.
Yeah.
I think there's potential there. Yeah.
Matt says, I think Tinder would lend itself well to an unbearable or secretly genius romantic comedy where two people, both so extremely good looking that it's ridiculous that they would actually need to be on Tinder to find dates to begin with, see each other's profiles, and are each about to swipe right but end up accidentally swiping left. Which is funny because I stopped and I was like, oh, okay, this must be that's something to do with Tinder.
If you reject the person, not interested, you swipe left. If you're interested, mm-hmm. you swipe right. And I believe if you both swipe right, then it hooks you up or something.
So, immediately, yeah. Right? Like transportation.
Somehow one of you shows up at the other one's house.
And he gives a bunch of consensus.
If whatever reason they accidentally swipe left.
Or whatever. And so they've lost each other forever. Or have they?
Good rom-com setup. Yeah.
Yes. It's not bad, actually. The two app-crossed lovers spend the whole movie following separate stories, failing at dating several times, almost crossing paths, mm-hmm. very much like Serendipity.
Yeah,
borrow from Serendipity. You can't, that's fine.
You've got males got some of that, too. Where they
got males, yes.
Of course, they're communicating online, unbeknownst to each other.
Good point.
This is tricky here when we have our two main characters who don't actually meet until the end of the movie.
Here's what I like. He says, stay till after the credits. There's a bonus scene in real time, longer than the actual movie itself, set on their first date, which we see the two characters end up having no chemistry together whatsoever, but just politely and awkwardly stick out the date as people do. Because are we really going to find true love on Tinder?
Right. I do like that. That's a good idea for a good movie prank. It would not be nearly funny enough to justify itself to do like a really short movie and then a really long post-credits sequence.
If it was like Will Ferrell and Kristen Wiig on this date, just improvising for an hour, we might be able to handle it.
Yeah,
we might.
Jeremy suggests, in the vein of 1 hour photo, Jake Gyllenhaal sold. Jake Gyllenhaal stars as a lonely office worker who follows a coworker on Instagram, and the coworker is Rebecca Hall. I like her.
Mm-hmm.
It's following her on Instagram. So at first, what starts off as a way to connect with this woman that he has a crush on quickly turns into a sick obsession as he's baffled how she seemingly has the perfect life. And so he sets out to destroy it. And Jeremy suggests Filtered as the title, which I like. Filtered.
That's good.
I like that on Instagram.
A few people mentioned games that we weren't familiar
specific
with.
Specific games. And which could be any games. Because I know Words with Friends.
Monument Valley.
Okay.
But then Jeffrey. I'm sorry. Geoffrey.
There you go.
Pronounced it correctly. He just said, like, have you guys seen Transistor? The answer was absolutely no. And it's like 1920 cyberpunk. I watched the trailer and it's just like, the thing I said to you was just like, I am so happy I don't play video games anymore. I would get lost. This looks amazing.
It does look a very cool animation. Yeah.
And yes, I'm assuming there are probably now a slew of quality apps, games like that could translate because storytelling is possible.
And Geoffrey says that this Transistor is a 1920s cyberpunk aesthetic, which sounds good. But yeah, some people also mentioned – I assume that the answers, the pitches for the Temple Run movie and the Monument Valley movie, I assume those are great pitches. for games that I don't know. Same with Riley's Smash Monsters and Ridiculous Fishing. I'm sure. Yeah. I'm sure those are great suggestions.
Wait, are you going to do? Are you going to read it?
Andy's, okay. Yeah. Yep. And then Andy suggests a Scream or The Ring type horror movie based on a countdown calendar app. In the midst of people's countdowns to birthdays, vacations, and whatnot, a small group of people suddenly get countdowns on their phones titled "You're Dead," accompanied by a skull icon that starts at 5 days. Each day it counts down, they get more paranoid. If they try to remove the app or change the date, the countdown loses an additional day. Ooh, I like that.
Ooh.
When it comes to 0 days, they die mysteriously. Coroners can't find a cause of death, and the countdown transfers to a friend or relative's phone. Probably whoever was the last person they called before they died would be my assumption how that works. Turns out they were killed as part of a secret government-run population control program.
Oh, wow. So the government wants everybody to be paranoid.
And to actually kill some people.
And to kill people. Well, of course they want to kill people.
Right.
I mean, it's our government.
I don't know about that ending. I don't know about that ending. But I like the countdown to you're dead. And then
just like at the funeral, it goes to somebody else's phone.
Yeah.
What the hell is that movie that keeps getting bigger and bigger with every sequel? Final Destination.
Final Destination. Yeah, kind of like that.
Yeah.
I think there's potential there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. Thanks for your answers, everybody.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, like everybody. That one.
Everyone.
Jeff, what's the question next week?
Brought to us by our listener, Patrick Felton. Mr. Patrick Felton, thank you. What fictitious movie product would you like to own? For example, hoverboard.
Hoverboard from Back to the Future.
Everybody will say that.
Right. So, and we're limiting product here to, like, not technology. You can't say, oh, I want...
the Millennium Falcon.
Right.
Because it's like you know, it's not a
technology,
something.
Yeah,
it's a technology leap. Right. But yeah.
A product. You know what I mean by a product.
Product.
Doesn't necessarily have to have a brand name, but you know, a thing that in the movie they could buy and that you would like to be able to buy it.
That's right.
That's what it is. If it's something in the movie that you can buy, that a consumer can buy retail, that you'd like to be able to buy in real life.
There is a nerd right now being like, come on, guys, Millennium Falcon was offered for this price.
Solo bought the Millennium Falcon. And the Ghostbusters were girls.
Oh, man.
So you can email us at moviebspdx@gmail.com or just post it on the Facebook.
Eric, do you think you've seen anything that's been interesting lately?
That's not the name of the game. That's not what this segment is called.
I was teasing the segment. I was like, whoa, maybe there's something new is happening on the show. Nah. This is just like the game we like to play that's called, hey... It's not a game.
It's not even a game. It's a segment, yeah.
That's it. I'm out.
Hey, what'd you watch? That's what it's called.
Thanks for asking. I watched a film that I had never seen before called Sweet Smell of Success from 1957.
I have not seen that film either.
You've never seen that film?
Nope.
It's a film that demands to be seen.
So I hear. I really don't like a pushy film that goes making demands on me, but all right.
I think you, in particular, will quite enjoy the snappy dialogue.
I know the sort of movie it is, and it seems right up my alley. I've just never seen it.
Do you know what it's not?
What is it not?
It is not a musical.
What?
It took me like 10 minutes to be like, I thought, where's the singing?
And Sweet Smell of Success does sound like a...
Well, guess what?
Hmm.
It became a Broadway musical, and John Lithgow won a Tony for it.
Was it still called Sweet Smell of Success?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
This happened in the early aughts.
It reminds me of Sweet Charity, which is a musical.
All right. I'll take your word for it.
How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying.
That I know.
A musical. So but I can I don't, see I don't thinking know if I've Sweet Smell it. Of Success.
Which, yeah.
Anyway, it's good though?
Oh, it's good. It's really, yes. It's really good. Not great on portraying women.
Yeah.
It is late 50s, and it's a shame.
It's late 50s, and women were terrible then. And the movies of the time reflect that.
It's the type of movie where if something tragic happens to a woman, she passes out afterward. She's like, oh my gosh, I can't.
I feel like they were doing that up until the 80s even.
I know. Women can't handle emotion.
You really used to faint a lot, apparently, just at the slightest thing.
If only we could do something to make this woman talk less in this script that I'm writing right now. I know, she'll pass out again.
Who's in it? That sweet smell.
Tony Curtis and,
I thought you had the thing up there in front of you.
No.
Well.
What the heck? He was a producer on the movie. Lancaster?
Burt Lancaster, yes.
Yeah, there we go. I squeezed it in. Were you recording
well done,
all of
well
that?
Done. Yes, yes.
Counts, it counts. It's official. Okay. I got it out before you said anything. One other thing.
Yeah.
I just finished the second season of Star Wars Rebels, and
that's not a movie.
You got? Well, no, they have kind of like hour-long episodes that they occasionally kind of call movies.
Yeah, they can call it a movie.
I'm just saying it's really worth checking out, guys. Oh, and I watched Winnie the Pooh with Dylan, my son.
That's cute. And this was Dylan's first full-length movie, right?
He is 3.6 years old. He has definitely watched TV shows.
Sure.
And potentially, you know, one time or the other, watched more than an hour in TV in one sitting, like if I was sick or something. Fine. It happened. Get off my back.
I'm not judging you. I watched 7 hours of TV a day when I was a kid, and I turned out TV. I stole that from Homer Simpson.
I know. It really got me, though. Good delivery. Oh.
But did he enjoy Winnie the Pooh? Which is not a very long movie. It's like 62
minutes. Yeah. It's 62 minutes. He did enjoy it quite a bit. And it was really sad because my wife was out of town and I had to leave the room to feed my baby son. Mm-hmm. And it was during the potential scary part. And I walked back into the room, the back's in, because I let the movie go because timing wise and everything else. Sure. And I didn't know how long I was going to be feeding Max. And I was like, he can handle it. He's seen some TV stuff.
Sure.
And I came back into the room. He was standing kind of leaning away from his seat as far as he could, like leaning away from the TV, hands over his ears. And he was like, Daddy, turn it down so the monster will go away. <That's> I was like, oh. But like we talked about it and he was totally cool with it.
Okay.
He was like, yep, it's make-believe. Yep, you keep me safe. Yeah, I have nothing to worry about.
Yeah, turning it down wouldn't help. That's not how monsters work.
That's what he thinks. Yeah. The quieter it is, the less scary it is.
A hard rain's going to fall for him.
Anyway, it was good times. I liked it. And I think I'll watch another movie with him sometime.
I think that's a good idea. Show him Pulp Fiction.
I'm trying to figure out what should be second.
I was wondering
if it should be Bambi or Fox and the Hound.
Not Bambi, because here's the thing about Bambi. Nobody likes Bambi.
No, nothing happens. It's just like...
No, it's boring. Yeah, until his mom dies.
No, that happens right away. Doesn't that happen right away?
No, that happens
later. Then he just like goes off on a... Oh, I guess it's not right away. But otherwise, it's just day in the... Like, right. It's day in the life of a deer. That's all that happens.
Boring day in a boring life of a boring deer.
There's
got to be a better, Disney
I want
classic.
The first time that he sees... the Muppets to be a time that he thinks is positive. So I'm waiting on that a little bit because I don't think
he's too young for the Muppets. He wouldn't
live action. He's not ready for a full length live action film yet.
I watched Mary Poppins with a friend, with a few friends, one of whom had not seen it before.
It's insane.
I know. And he's not 3.5 either. He's like 24 and a half or something.
That will be one of Dylan's first live actions.
Oh yeah. And in fact, he even said that this friend who had not seen it before enjoyed it. But he said, I wish I had seen this as a kid. I needed this as a child.
Because
it's one of my favorite movies. It's been a while since I'd watched it.
You love it.
I do love that movie. And it's just so magical and delightful. And Julie Andrews is just great.
How long is it? That's the one problem.
It's like 2 hours and 20. It is long. Okay. And this time around, I pulled a Jeff Bayer. I said, you know what, if this were me, I would cut the rooftop, the chimney sweep, step in time, that whole sequence. Because it's long and it comes late in the movie and it doesn't advance the plot. Like, I would just lose that.
Yeah, it is just for entertainment's sake.
Yeah, and it's fine back earlier, but at this point in the movie, no, just get on with it. But no, it's just such a great movie. And
I have that song running in my head now. Thanks.
Here's a little secret about me. The songs from Mary Poppins are always in my head.
Did you sing Well, you watched it.
So there was some singing going on.
Oh,
not
my
just,
gosh.
Not just me, but some, not a lot, but the odd line here and there.
Oh, okay, okay.
No, not the whole thing. No.
Nobody did a verse.
No, 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 no.
Okay, all right.
And I also watched the original Wicker Man. Did you ever see that?
Oh, with Nick Cage, sure.
No, the original one.
You're saying Nick Cage isn't original?
No, not in this case. I watched that finally, and it's a good movie, and I can see why it's got a bit of a cult following.
Unsettling?
Not really. I mean,
oh, okay.
No,
not like a Serpent in the Rainbow, kind of like this is getting creepy.
Not like
or
that.
Jacob's
More
Ladder.
Just, it's an interesting time capsule from the early 70s and good stuff. Worth checking out if you're into horror, vintage horror.
I mean, early 70s, I'm going to say there are naked women in this movie.
There are.
I'd know. Interesting. Interesting.
Mm. Oh, and then Fright Night. Watch the original Fright Night from 1985.
Nice.
It's okay.
Yeah.
It's good enough. Yeah, that's all I got to say about what I watched.
That was good. You did good.
Thanks.
I mean, you didn't watch, you know, the first movie ever with your son, but no, that was interesting.
No, I didn't. I don't have a son, Jeff. You know that. You know I can't have children.
Not that way.
I've been trying. Hey, it's the end of the show. The Nice Guys. Go see it. It's funny.
It is.
Neighbors 2, Sorority Rising.
Go see it. It's funny.
Also funny. It's yeah. See it.
Yeah. Both. It's really just a matter of like, what do you have time for, and What do you want? Do
you
want
more what you're in the mood for? The Nice Guys has some violence in it, like it's sort of a violent action mm-hmm. comedy.
But
Neighbors 2 doesn't
like,
so much.
Neighbors 2 has women being empowered in it, so like you know,
and it's gross stuff.
Violence or empowering women is going to one of those things
like,
makes you uncomfortable.
Or like some really or like some fairly graphic sex jokes and body kind of jokes. Yeah,
there was a. There was a rough
couple of them, man. A
there
lot.
Was a rough
Neighbors too. Another thing I like about that movie so much is that it is you know a gross out comedy or a sex mm-hmm. comedy R-rated thing, but it doesn't feel sleazy or dirty.
Nope.
Like it's very funny, but at the end of it, I didn't feel like I needed a shower like
right.
I do a lot of times after those movies.
Yeah.
The Angry Birds movie is terrible, and I'm sorry you have to take your kids to see it. And A Bigger Splash is good, solid, grown-up, sophisticated drama.
Ooh, hang on a second. Hmm. Do you have Angry Birds?
Oh, the
box
game,
office
no.
challenge? No, oh, box oh. office challenge.
The game that I was thinking, like, here in my house, right. I've got a cat, but he's not angry. No, who does have – I do have Angry Birds. I also have Neighbors 2 Sorority Rising.
Nice.
You don't have anything this weekend, and
no.
neither of us had anything last week. We didn't have Money Monster or The Darkness,
so which is good. We're doing good so far.
Do not regret that.
Right.
Yeah. So I got two this week, and then nice. you'll start to catch up next week. Question of the week: what was it?
It was what fictitious movie product would you like to own?
Mm-hmm. Tell us your answers to that, and that'll be that. So until next week, for Movie BS with Bear and Snyder, I'm Eric D. Snyder.
I am Jeff Bear.
Thank you for listening, and good day.
I said good day.